Amateur Radio Newsline report number 1911 with a release date of March 28, 2014 to follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST. Ham Radio is offering a pair of transponders on an upcoming geostationary satellite launch. The final commissioning of the new Ham TV on the International Space Station is again delayed. United Kingdom hams may get added spectrum on 2 meters. The FCC grants several experimental licenses in the 70-centimeter band. Planning is underway for the International Marconi Day and an April 1st report on remote operation by you-know-who. All this and more on Amateur Radio Newsline report number 1911, coming your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's independent on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now, here is Jim Davis, W2JKD.
The dreams of many hams around the world will become reality within the next 2 years. This with the announcement that there will soon be a geostationary satellite carrying amateur radio as part of its payload. Amateur Radio Newsline's Heather Emby, KB3TZD, has the rest of this story.
Ham radio will have its own geostationary transponders on orbit by the end of 2016. This thanks to approval of a concept from the Qatar Amateur Radio Society to include a pair of Phase 4 amateur transponders, part of the Qatar Satellite Company's new SHELSAT-2 communication satellite. Peter Guelzo, DB2OS, is the president of AMSAT Germany. He says that Qatar's SHELSAT-2 will carry a 250 kHz wide linear transponder intended for conventional analog operations such as CW and SSB. Also on board will be an 8 MHz wide transponder to be used for experimental digital modulation schemes and digital amateur television. Precise operating frequencies remain to be finalized, but the uplinks will be in the 2.4 to 2.45 GHz and the downlinks in the 10.45 to 10.5 GHz amateur satellite service allocations. Both of the transponders will be feeding broad beam antennas to provide coverage of about one-third of the Earth's surface. This equates to Europe, Africa, along with parts of South America and Asia. Because of its orbital position and the antenna beam width, it will not provide service to Central and North America. Precise operational plans will be finalized over the coming months, but it is anticipated that only quite simple ground station equipment will be required to hold QSOs via the transponders on board the soon-to-be-orbited geostationary satellite. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Heather Emby, KB3TZD, in Berwick, Pennsylvania.
The Qatar Amateur Radio Society and Qatar Satellite Company are cooperating on the ham radio aspect of the project. A team of amateurs led by DB2OS is also providing technical support. It appears as if there'll be a few weeks' delay in the final commissioning of the new ham TV system on board the International Space Station. According to ARIS Europe Chairman Gaston Bertels, ON4WF, the final step to bring Ham TV into full operation now will not take place until late April or early May due to the scheduled arrival of the SpaceX Dragon resupply ship, docking, and related operations. Because of this, the current ham radio video blank transmissions will come to an end on March the 31st. NASA has confirmed the new launch of the resupply mission. The Dragon spacecraft will ride into the space sitting atop a SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket on March the 30th at 10:50 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time from the Cape Canaveral Air Force Station. The mission will deliver 4,959 pounds of supplies to the International Space Station. The 2-meter band in the United Kingdom may soon be a megahertz larger. This as United Kingdom telecommunications regulator Ofcom publishes a consultation on the release of around 6 megahertz of VHF spectrum in the 143 to 169 megahertz band, which has been returned for civil usage. We get details from Amateur Radio Newsline's Stephen Kinford, N8WB.
For ham radio operators in the UK, the key point of the consultation is the proposal to permit temporary access of the spectrum from 146 to 147 megahertz for amateur radio use, until or unless it might be needed by business radio or other services. Should additional spectrum be needed to meet those operational requirements, Ofcom says that it will remove the temporary ham radio allocation. Amateur radio use of 146 to 147 megahertz will be on a non-protected and non-interference basis with any other service. There will also be some geographical restrictions to ensure that there is no interference to neighboring countries. Authorization to use this spectrum by UK hams will be by an individual notice of variation to an applicant's amateur radio license. A notice of variance is the equivalent of a special temporary authority, while an Ofcom consultation is about the same as an FCC notice of proposed rulemaking here in the United States. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Stephen Kinford, NAWB reporting.
Response to the Ofcom proposals in the consultation by United Kingdom citizens are due by May the 26th. A group of hams from Atlantic Canada will operate from Pouch Cove, Newfoundland, from July the 4th through the 12th. This is in a bid to complete a 2-meter transatlantic QSO and claim the Brendan Trophy. The expedition will take to the air from Maidenhead Grid GN37, transmitting on 144.270 MHz with about 750 watts into a 30-meter-long rope Yagi with a gain of more than 23 decibels over a dipole. The group will concentrate its efforts on using the digital mode JT65B that offers greatly enhanced performance over more conventional analog operation. It'll also have the capability to operate CW and single sideband if the conditions warrant. A special call sign has been requested and will be announced if and when approved. In the event that the approval for a special call sign is not received, the group will use VO1NO. Real-time information on operating modes and schedules will be posted during the de-expedition on the team's website, the ON4KSK website, and the G4CQM shoutbox. Facebook users are also welcome to join the group's page, Brendan Quest 2-Meter Transatlantic Attempt 2014. The Brendan Trophy is part of a series of awards offered by the Irish Radio Transmitter Society to the first amateur radio operators to complete a 2-meter transatlantic QSO. Further information is on the web now, www.brendanquest.org, or by email to info@brendanquest.org. The FCC has issued its recently granted experimental licenses, and there are a few that will likely be of interest to ham radio operators, primarily those using the shared 420 to 450 megahertz band. Amateur radio operators in the area north of Denver, Colorado, may eventually notice transmissions from Detect Incorporated on 449 megahertz. This will be in connection with the testing of wind profiler radar and remote sensing technology operating mobile around the Longmont area. And General Dynamics is using the same band for development of software-defined radios operating with wide networking waveform mobile technology in Scottsdale, Arizona. The specific requests for the frequencies that General Dynamics will be using are 420 to 424.75, 445.75 to 450 MHz, 1370 to 1400, and 1755 to 1850 megahertz. The complete list of experimental license grants from January the 1st through February the 1st of this year has been made available in the FCC Public Notice Report number 453, which is subtitled Experimental Actions. In DX Upfront, the Mellish Reef de-expedition team is now in Australia and making ready to head out to sea. According to the group's latest update, all of the equipment has arrived, antennas have been tested, are now stored for the voyage. If all continues as planned, the ship will be fueled and the group will set sail for Mellish Reef sometime on March the 25th. And word that 9 operators will be active from Dodkinese with a special call sign of SX5LA from May the 3rd to the 11th. Operations will be on 160 through 6 meters using CW, sideband, and RIDI. QSLs go via SV2FWV. Also, LZ1GC is planning to be operational as C21GC from the Republic of Nauru between September the 29th and October the 19th. Activity will be on 160 through 10 meters using CW, sideband, and RIDI. Logs will be uploaded to Club Log during his operation, if at all possible. The QSL route for this operation has not yet been announced. Time for you to identify your station. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the W9YPC repeater serving Markham, Illinois. In what might be called one of the stranger enforcement cases we've reported, the FCC has issued a $15,000 notice of apparent liability for forfeiture to Walter Olenek and M. Ray Natick Olenek. This for alleged operations of an unlicensed radio station on the frequency of 90.1 megahertz in Austin, Texas. But the question is whether or not those handed the proposed fines will recognize the FCC's authority to issue it. Skeeter Nash, N5ASH, is near Houston, Texas, with more.
According to the regulatory agency, back on August 12, 2013, agents from the Enforcement Bureau's Houston office used direction finding to locate the source of radio on 90.1 megahertz to an antenna atop an approximately 50-foot-tall tower mounted to the side of an apartment building. On September 6, 2013, the Houston office issued Mr. and Mrs. Olenek a warning letter, which advised them that the operation of an unlicensed radio station from their property violated the Communications Act. The warning also instructed Mr. and Mrs. Olenek to describe the steps taken to secure the common areas of their property. On September 16, 2013, the Houston office received a reply from Mr. and Mrs. Olenek, which did not deny that they owned the apartment building or operated an unlicensed radio station from the apartment building. Rather, with respect to the common areas of the building, the response stated that the agent did not have permission or consent to enter the premises. They also stated that because they had no commercial nexus with the commission, they did not consent, directly or by any implication, to the commission's policies, procedures, or jurisdiction. They also implied that they do not consider themselves subject to the laws of the United States because they stated they expect any future communications to come from the International Bureau only after a treaty to which they are signatories is signed. But in its findings, the FCC noted that it has every right to observe from common grounds and that it also had the authority to regulate radio transmissions within the state of Texas. With that, it gave the Oleniks the customary 30 days from the February 19th issuance of the proposed $15,000 fine to pay or to file an appeal. I'm Skeeter Nash, N5ASH.
The 30-day response period is now passed, but there's been no word from the FCC if it has any response to the proposed $15,000 fine. An Oklahoma hobby radio enthusiast has been issued a $12,000 notice of apparent liability for operating a citizens band radio transmitter to interfere with the communications of other CB stations. The recipient of the proposed fine is Orloff Haynes. He's KF5IXX from the city of Enid, whom the FCC says was the subject of an action beginning back in May 14, 2013. Now, that's when an agent of the Enforcement Bureau's Dallas office T-hunted and positively identified the source of a continuous carrier on 27.1850 megahertz to Orloff Haynes residence. That frequency corresponds to CB Channel 19. At that point, the agent decided to do a station inspection. He identified himself, and while Orloff Haynes was not present, Mrs. Haynes showed the agent her husband's CB station, which was continuously transmitting on Channel 19. At that point, Mrs. Haynes stated that Mr. Haynes was continuously transmitting on Channel 19 because other CB operators in the area were harassing her. Now, during the inspection, the agent telephoned Orloff Haynes, who admitted that he was keyed up on Channel 19 to prevent other CB operators in the area from bothering his wife. At the conclusion of the inspection, Mrs. Haynes voluntarily turned off the CB transmitter, resolving the interference. And making its decision to issue the $12,000 proposed fine, the FCC noted that on two prior occasions that Haynes had been issued written warnings from the Dallas office advising him that intentionally interfering with other CB operators violated the Commission's Act and the Commission rules. It then stated that based on the evidence before it, it finds Orloff Haynes apparently and willfully violated the rules by intentionally interfering with other CB stations, and as such, punitive action is warranted. Haynes was given the usual 30 days from the March 21st appeal date that the notice was published to pay it in full, arrange time payments, or to file an appeal. A Florida ham has effectively resigned from the hobby and entered into a consent decree with the FCC. This to end enforcement action taken against him for his alleged interference to a law enforcement two-way radio system. Amateur Radio Newsline's Ralph Squidlacci, KK6ITB, reports.
As part of a consent decree ending an enforcement action, Cocoa, Florida radio amateur Terry L. Van Valkenburg, KC5RF, has given up his advanced class amateur radio license. He also agreed to make a $1,000 voluntary donation to the United States Treasury in installments and waive all rights to contest the validity of the consent decree that was released on March 19th. The case goes back some 2 years to September of 2012. That's when the FCC began an investigation in response to an interference complaint filed by the Brevard County Sheriff's Department. The Enforcement Bureau subsequently determined that Van Valkenburg had transmitted on 465.300 MHz without a license for operating in that spectrum and interfering with the radio system in the county jail. On March 1, 2013, the FCC found Van Valkenburg liable for a $25,000 forfeiture, which the commission subsequently determined he would be unable to pay. The commission said it was entering into the agreement and terminating the enforcement proceeding in part to avoid further expenditure of public resources. The Enforcement Bureau also agreed not to institute any new proceeding on the basis of the one just concluded. In settling the enforcement action, Van Valkenburg admitted, solely for the purpose of the consent decree and for commission civil enforcement purposes, that the radio transmissions he made on 465.300 MHz sparked the investigation of violations of the Communications Act. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Ralph Squillaci, KK6ITB, reporting.
Prior to signing the consent decree, the FCC said Van Valkenburg had requested in writing that the commission cancel his amateur radio license, which it did, effective March the 14th. Meanwhile, Saturday, April 26th, is when stations around the world will be on the air to celebrate International Marconi Day. This is a once-a-year opportunity to make contact with the historic Marconi locations around the world and to celebrate the birth of Guglielmo Marconi on April the 25th, 1874. At airtime, over 20 Marconi-related sites have confirmed that they'll be on board this year's celebration. These include the historic GB4 IMD at Poldhu in Cornwall, England, along with VO1AA on Signal Hill in St. John's, Newfoundland, and W2MRC at Monmouth Junction in New Jersey. All stations planning to participate are urged to register in advance. Full details are at www.gb4imd.com. Some names in the news. Tony Emanuel, WA8RJF, has been named the new VHF editor of CQ Amateur Radio Magazine. A ham for nearly 50 years, Emanuel, who lives in Painesville, Ohio, has been active on VHF and above for the past 30 years. He enjoys building equipment and has operated on all bands from 6 meters to 47 gigahertz. Professionally, Emanuel is the sales engineer and sales manager for a specialty LCD company. He succeeds Joe Lynch, N6CL, who stepped down after 22 years as the VHF editor to devote his full energies to his new position as Director of Religious Education for the United States Military Academy at West Point, New York. And Fernando Casanova, EC1AME, has posted that back in the 1980s, while he was reading the Spanish language magazine Hola and found a very interesting article about Marlon Brando's private island in the Pacific. Amongst the pictures he spotted were two ham radio related ones and later posted them to the EA1URO internet discussion site. As some of you may know, Marlon Brando was licensed as KE6ZPH here in the USA and FO5GJ while in Tahiti. According to Wikipedia.com, Brando was listed in the Federal Communications Commission records as Martin Brando, B-R-A-N-D-E-A-U-X, to preserve his privacy, and that he used that name while on the air. His private island was to become a luxury resort in 2013. So, EC1AME says that it's a perfect moment to remember how it looked in the 1980s. You can see these photos on the web at tinyurl.com/Marlon-Brando-Station. This is Ham Radio News for today's Radio Amateur. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline, with links to the world from our only official website at www.arnewsline.org and being relayed by the volunteer services of the following Radio Amateur.
Now, here is something that you do not hear about very often. Repeaters reducing the amount of time that they operate because their user base is fading away. It's taking place over in the UK, and Jeremy Boot, G4NJH, has more.
Due to the falling membership, the Leicestershire Repeater Group has taken the decision to limit the hours of operation of the repeaters GB3CF, GB3GV, GB3LE, and GB3UM to conserve funds. As a result, the repeaters are now switched off overnight between 10 p.m. and 5 a.m. The beacons GB3LEX and LES continue to operate 24 hours a day. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jeremy Boot, G4NJH, in Nottingham, in the heart of the UK.
Here in the United States, many repeaters are also seeing a falling number of users. This as the cost of site rental, insurance, and electrical power continue to rise. And as such, we can't help but wonder if limiting the hours that relatively underused repeaters could operate could become a phenomenon that could spread to this side of the Atlantic as well. Zach Manchester, KD2BHC, has posted an update regarding the KickSat CubeSat, which will carry 104 tiny Sprite satellites into short-term Earth orbit. KickSat, with its Sprite cargo, are part of the payload to be carried into space on the SpaceX Falcon 9 CRS-3 mission. As previously reported, all of the tiny Sprite satellites transmit on the same frequency. So as to identify one from the other, each Sprite has a unique pair of pseudo-random numbers, or PRN codes, that marks its transmissions and allows a receiver to tell them apart. A list of all Sprite PRN codes is available in a spreadsheet format at tinyurl.com/sprite-id. NASA has released an interactive mosaic of infrared images of the Milky Way. According to the space agency, what's known as the Galactic Legacy Midplane Survey Extraordinaire Project, or GLIMPSE 360 for short, allows viewers to see stars normally obstructed by the interstellar dust. The variable zoom image is a composite of more than 2 million photos taken by the Spitzer Space Telescope over the course of a decade and sent back to Earth via its radio system. NASA says because all of these images together still make up only 3% of our nighttime sky, but because the Milky Way is shaped like a stellar pancake, that small percentage also shows more than half of all of the stars in its disk. You can view the composite image online at tinyurl.com/glimpse360. The South Dakota CUSO party has a new sponsor and a new date. After the person who was coordinating the event had to give up due to other obligations, a small group made up of members of the USS South Dakota Wireless Association formed the N0EBC group and has stepped forward to take over the QSO party management. The new dates for the South Dakota CUSO party are October the 18th and the 19th of this year. The club's primary focus is special events, with the major undertaking being the Veterans Day special event W0V at the South Dakota Battleship Memorial. Details on the changes can be found at www.kb0wsw.com/SDQP. In DX, a large group of operators will be active as DA0HEI from Helgoland Island between April 3rd and the 12th. They plan to have 3 to 4 stations on the air, but no bands yet, nor operating times have been announced. If you make contact, QSL to DF6QC via the Bureau. LW9EOC will be active as 5J0T from St. Andre's Island between April the 18th to the 25th. His operations will be on 10 through 80 meters using CW, sideband, and RIDI. QSL via his home call sign. F4FET has announced that he'll operate maritime mobile and portable from the Isle of Mull between May the 12th to the 18th. His activity will be holiday style on the high-frequency bands. You can QSL via his home call sign, direct, or via the Bureau, or using Club Logs OQRS. JH7EQW will be on the air as A52EQW from Dachula Resort in Bhutan at the end of August or early September. Look for more details to be forthcoming. QSL via his home call sign. KT5S is planning to be active as V31NX from Belize, Starting at the end of September, operations will be on all the HF bands, QSL via his home call sign. Lastly, BA3AX and BD3AEO have postponed their trip to Utao Island that had been slated for March the 21st through the 24th. No reason given for the cancellation. And finally this week, one of the hot topics in ham radio today, especially amongst contesters and DXers, is remote operating. Our intrepid once yearly roving reporter, Pierre Pulling My Leg, has been looking into the phenomenon, and he files this report remotely, of course.
The magazines and the internet, they are always talking about this remote operating, and it has been something of a mystery to me, but I love a good mystery. Some people say remote operating will change the face of DXing and contesting. That is the first mystery to me. When I listen to some ham operators trying to contact the expedition or a rare DX station in a contest, the face is not the first part of the body that comes to mind. The next thing I try to figure out is whether my so-called universal remote would let me operate my station remotely while watching TV. I tried all sorts of combinations of button pushing. I found the organic gardening channel. I turned the coffee maker on and off. I started the car 3 times. But the ham rigs stayed on the same frequency, and I could not key the mic. So much for a universal remote. Then I realized that perhaps I had it all backwards, and that I have been doing ham radio remote operation for many years. I switched on my linear and keyed my mic. Every time I spoke, I remotely opened and closed garage doors up and down my street. I remotely rotated the neighbor's satellite dishes, and I remotely set off for car alarms. The appeal of all of this is still a mystery to me. Oh, there's the doorbell. A mystery visitor. The plot thickens. From the FCC's, till now, secret prison outside Gettysburg, this is Pierre Pulling My Leg reporting for Newsline.
Government officials assure us that Pierre will be released by next spring in time for his April the 1st, 2015 report. With thanks to Allen Labs, AMSAT, the ARRL, CQ Magazine, the FCC, the Ohio Pen, DX Bulletin, Radio Netherlands, RAIN, the RSGB, the South African Radio League, and the Southgate News, Twit TV, Australia's WIA News, and you, our listeners, that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. Our email address is newsline@arnewsline.org. More information is available at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website, located at www.arnewsline.org. You can also write to us or support us at Amateur Radio Newsline, 28197 Robin Avenue, Santa Clarita, California, 91350. Our email address is newsline@arnewsline.org. More information is available at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website, located at www.arnewsline.org. You can also write to us or support us at Amateur Radio Newsline, 28197 Robin Avenue, Santa Clarita, California, 91350. For now, with Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, at our editor's desk, I'm Jim Davis, W2JKD, saying 73, and we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2014, all rights are reserved.